Greetings and salutations. It's the podcast once again, this time for a Monday. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with John Shannon.
Hello, Robert.
Good morning. And there's a special guest for us, a guy we've talked to periodically over the years. Everybody has followed for, decades and decades. Dave Hodges.
You make him sound old. With us.
Well, we're all kind of in the same bracket, I'm afraid. There's not a damn thing we can do about it.
So that would be that would be 5 decades then, if you must be statistical.
Yeah, I mean, it's the truth. Toronto Blue Jays lost yesterday to Baltimore. The consequence of that is they wind up playing Tampa Bay in the first round, which doesn't look like a promising matchup, David. But you give them a chance in heck. It is, after all, just a 3-game series.
I give anybody a chance in a best of three. If my ace beats your ace, you probably win the series. So Hyunjin Ryu has every chance to beat Blake Snell, I would suggest. And I'm also going to tell you that I think the Jays wanted to play the Rays. And proof of that is that in a 4-4 tie, they put Shun Yamaguchi on the mound. And if that isn't an attempt to lose a game, I don't know what is.
Well, it was I must admit, it was a curious decision. I don't know whether I subscribe to your theory that this was sort of intentional, but it was a curious decision given that Yamaguchi has pitched horribly since he's been with the team.
Well, if you prefer to rise up ahead of the Yankees and face Shane Bieber, baseball's best pitcher, in game one, I'm going to tell you that Hyunjin Ryu doesn't have nearly as good a chance of winning that important game as he does against Tampa Bay's inconsistent, though sometimes brilliant in the past, Blake Snell. So if I were the Jays, I would be quite happy to play the Rays, and I think that is the case.
But Snell has pitched pretty well against the Jays, even in this short season. And their pitching staff is deeper. So, but are you just saying that they have a chance just because it's a 2 out of 3?
Yeah, the depth doesn't matter nearly as much as it would in a best of seven series if you're going to a fourth or even fifth starter. I think in every one of these series, or most of them, let's say. The team with the best pitcher in game one is probably going to win the series. I think Atlanta, which might have the best offense, 1 through 9, or let's say 1 through 6 or 7, in the majors, is shuddering at the thought of facing Cincinnati's pitching, Trevor Bauer, followed by Luis Castillo, or vice versa, could knock out Alex Anthopoulos's Braves. And I think a best of three is going to be fascinating to watch. But if I were the top seed, I would say, what am I getting for finishing first or second over 60 games? I'm getting a perilous first round matchup. I would also suggest that Major League Baseball is the one league that has always thumbed its nose at the others for putting half or more than half of its membership into the playoffs. And one would have thought baseball would never do this. And now suddenly we have 16 of 30 Major League Baseball teams in the playoffs. I grant you the circumstances are different in 2020, but the rationale for doing that in 2020 could have been used in any year. And baseball always refused to do it. There was an outcry when they added an extra wildcard team in each league. And now you get 16 playoff teams, and I'm sure the Jays fans are very happy. But I think in terms of baseball's integrity or credibility, this was never a good idea.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I respectfully disagree. I like the idea of more teams in the postseason. I like the idea of a 154-game schedule. I've said it many times here. But you're not in favor of that. You think that there should be fewer.
I think as many teams as make the playoffs in other leagues cheapens the idea of the regular season. And I always thought baseball could stand up and say we're different, and we're proud of that. Baseball can't say that this year.
It certainly sounds, though, like Rob Manfred is actually interested in keeping an expanded playoff format for the long term. Like, this is not, it doesn't sound like this is going to be a one-off.
I think that's debatable. I think some of the changes that you've seen in this season will continue. I think the runner at second base in the 10th inning or the 8th inning, if it happens to be a doubleheader, might remain. I think that, though it wasn't popular and still isn't with a lot of traditional baseball fans, is very popular in the major league front office. But 16 playoff teams, I think, needs more discussion, and I'm not sure that you're going to see this format again. And especially, you know, if the Rays lose to the Jays, if the Braves lose to the Reds, if the A's lose to the White Sox, if all of these upsets that could very easily occur because of the best of three, if that happens, I think you're going to hear an outcry and at least see a different first round. But if 16 teams are in the playoffs and, you know, they're all best of seven series, it takes too long.
Let's go back to the Ryu question. Unless I've missed something this morning, we're not 100% sure that Ryu is going to start game one.
They haven't announced anything yet.
Yeah, and there's some speculation on him going in game two. And getting him away from Snell may be part of that equation. But the truth of the matter is you got to win one of the first two games. How do you feel about the concept that your best pitcher, and in this case, he is clearly your best starting pitcher. There isn't no one's going to debate that. How do you feel about the concept of him starting game two instead of game one?
No, I think it's a must that every team would start its best pitcher in game one. I don't think you hold anything back. If you win that first game, and if you're the Blue Jays, I'm thinking this way. My bats are going to win me a second game in either game two or game three, because you've got a much better batting lineup than the Rays. That could win you game one, even if Ryu is not at his best. So the Jays have two ways to look at this. They out-hit the Rays and win the series that way, or they out-pitch them in game one and figure out a way to win a second game. But I would be confident if I were Toronto. If you built an all-star team, let's say a roster of 26 players who are active in these playoffs, 26 players from these 16 playoff teams, tell me one Tampa Bay player who would be on your team. I think there is none. And I'll now you're going to ask me if there are any Blue Jays there. And I would say Ryu would be on your pitching staff, and I think Lourdes Gurriel would be in your outfield.
I'll tell you the thing, David, that intrigues me about this team is they have a thing about them. They have an attitude about them. I don't know whether it's because they're young and inexperienced, whether they're cocky. They seem to like each other. But they seem to be able to operate on an even keel regardless of what happened yesterday or the day before, regardless what has happened in the first four or five innings of a ball game. Years ago, you'll recall, with the Blue Jays in the late 80s and early 90s, we always thought, well, they're never really out of a game. They can pile up a big number in any inning. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this Blue Jay team, who can score four, five, six runs in an inning just like that out of nowhere. And I wonder whether that confidence, cockiness, and in fact inexperience winds up being helpful.
But don't you think that comes from this group of guys playing for a lot more years than playing in the major leagues together? That there's a bunch of young guys that actually know the DNA of their teammates?
David?
If that's a question for me, I don't know. I think the answer could be yes. I think it could mean nothing. some negative comment is required here on a Jays team that had its horrible moments this season.
Of course it is.
Not that many late in the season. They don't play smart baseball, and they better be smarter against a Tampa team that, while on paper looks like nothing, must have something going for it to have the record it has. And I think they probably play smarter than the Jays have. I also think Tropicana Field, with or without fans, which sounds like a silly statement to make because there seldom are fans there anyway. I think it's a factor. I think, you know, the Rays know the field and stadium and all its quirks and are probably at an advantage because of that. And then there's the history of awful things happening to the Blue Jays, although these young guys not many of them share in that history. So there's a few advantages, I think, in Tampa's case. But I like the Jays, as to say, I like the Jays' bats better, and I think Ryu is more consistent if he goes in game one than Snell, and I have no idea why the Jays would not start Ryu in game one.
Do you think it's fair to perceive that the Toronto Blue Jays this year have played 60 road games? Do you think Buffalo really has any home field advantage for the Toronto Blue Jays?
They had a great number there. They were 17-8, I think, at Salem Field. They were pretty good there.
But they're staying in a hotel. They're doing all the things they would do on the road. David, what do you think?
Well, I agree with John that the stadium in Buffalo has treated them well. It's also, if you've ever been there, looks like a great hitter's park to me, and the Jays have treated it that way, and so I think the fact that most of these players have known it, and the ball flies out of there, I think it has been certainly not a disadvantage to them in any way, other than what you've pointed out, Bob, and I don't know that in this season there's any advantage to being at home and then flying somewhere and playing and then going back home. And it might be just as well to do what the Jays have done and treat it like a 60-game road trip.
Let's change gears a little bit, John. Game six goes tonight in the Stanley Cup Final. And it feels like inevitably Tampa Bay is going to figure this out and close this series out or not. or is Dallas got more magic in their sticks? What do you think, David?
You ask John first. I'd like to hear his answer.
I tell you what, I think a lot of us are surprised that Tampa hasn't been able to close it out. When you look at the horsepower they have offensively, when you see Victor Hedman on the blue line, when you think Vasilevsky's a better goalie than Hudobin, but at the same time, Dallas, for the most part, has played probably a better complete defensive game than Tampa has. And it's too many times in too many years we've seen teams that play, quiet defensive hockey that's not very exciting and wait for mistakes to happen. They win. If we were talking fire wagon hockey and both teams going up and down the ice ad nauseum, then you'd have to give the edge to Tampa. But right now, Rick Bowness has Dallas playing probably a better defensive style. Their four defensemen, the top four defensemen, Oleksiak, Klingberg, Heiskanen, and Lindell, have not made very many mistakes, and they've played pretty well. So. And then you shake your head and say, well, holy smokes, Corey Perry and Joe Pavelski have done what they've done. They've scored the last six goals, in fact, for Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would not surprise me now that Dallas wins game six. It would not surprise me.
Hodge?
I have a disturbing, to me, lack of interest. Feel free to comment.
Well, You're a baseball fan now, Dave. We all know that. You're a baseball guy. Come on, you know.
Yeah. Well, you don't talk to me without calling me a hockey fan too, usually. But I have found this interminable 24-team playoff, and don't give me the argument that it was a 16-team playoff. It wasn't.
Oh, no.
The regular season ends. The playoffs begin. This regular season ended, and the playoffs began with 24 teams still playing. Over time, I have just sort of shrugged my shoulders and said, you know, two teams are going to be in the playoffs. In the final, they probably will be the two teams that handle this bubble situation the best. Not necessarily the two best teams in another circumstance, although we'll never know that. But I don't follow it nearly as closely as I did before. And you could say that there are other reasons for that. But I just find that I've seen enough hockey for 2020.
Well, is some of that because it is a rarity to have it's never happened, significant baseball games on at the same time as significant hockey games. Yes, the two seasons do overlap. In April, the Blue Jays baseball starts up again. The NHL is going into their playoff situation. You know, it's easy to say, you know, if you're sitting in the middle, well, I'm going to watch the playoffs because they're more meaningful. But here we have two sports that traditionally do not overlapping, and your choice has been baseball, which you are perfectly entitled to, and apparently are not alone in, David, because the television ratings for the Stanley Cup playoffs have not been great.
I'll widen my perspective and say that I have a less interest in baseball than I would normally have, and in basketball, and in football, now that we have the NFL starting up. I regard it all as made for TV shows. I understand why they're doing it as a business decision, and I wouldn't tell them not to do it, but I would tell them that I regard fans in the stands as a vital, integral, important part of sports as I have watched them all my life. And all of these games and all of these leagues without fans in the stands changes my way of watching, my level of interest. And I'm not going to return to my normal level of interest until the stadiums are full again. And hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. But I think this affects not only people like me, viewers, and I'm not saying there aren't viewers who are as interested as ever in mm-hmm. what they're watching now and are very happy to have it available to them with not much else going on. But I think the players have been affected by this too. And I think the caliber of play shows that. I think the faces of some of these players will show that they're not at their best. They're not enjoying the game that they love as nearly as much. And so I'm going to tell you that, you know, my level of interest in any of these games or leagues is less than I wish it was and that it used to be.
But the reality is there was no option.
No, no, right?
You acknowledge that
in the beginning.
Yeah.
I wasn't campaigning for all these leagues to shut down and wait until 2021 or 2022. I understand why they're playing. I'm happier they're playing than not, but I'm not nearly as happy as I hope to be. And I do find that the artificial nature of what we're watching versus, and then, I mean, let's add the fact that, you know, you can't go to a game. I would be more interested in the Blue Jays if I could have been watching them. I would have been more interested in the Leafs if I could have been watching them play against Columbus, and so on.
Well, here's what I will. Let me throw my two cents in here. When this whole thing started with games without fans in the stands, it was a little shocking. It was a little hard to get used to. I know I spent more time watching the Raptors than I did anything else in the beginning. And then when they went out, obviously, I went somewhere else. I'm now at the point where I hardly notice it. And Shannon, you wanted to say something. Jump in.
I understand what you're saying. But what I would tell you is that I think one of the downsides of all of this, and particularly for the NBA and the NHL, is every game looks the same. Every game looks the same. At least in Major League Baseball, we see different stadiums, and how the different teams have staged what the ballpark is supposed to look like. But every game, and I think this is part of, I think this is a bit of part of the malaise of basketball and hockey fans, is that every game looks identical.
Well, maybe as a lifelong TV guy, that is important to you. The visuals impact you. They don't impact me at all. Toronto Maple Leafs are playing at home. They're playing on the road. I have to look at the uniform in order to figure out where they're playing. Baseball, you have different dimensions and stadia, different looks. You have, mm-hmm. A big wall in Boston. You have all kinds of things that separate it that make it intriguing. But generally, a basketball court's a basketball court. A hockey rink is a hockey rink. A football stadium is a football stadium. The dimensions are all the same. And football especially, they show the crowd so seldom during a football game. Who cares where they're playing? Doesn't impact me. Dave, you want to say something?
Yeah, I agree with John that the games look the same, and I would add they all sound the same too.
Right.
It's amazing how the crowds at every one of these games sound the same.
The fake crowds.
Simulated crowd sound. And I think, that affects me. I think that the way a home crowd reacts to a home team's success or failure in various rinks and stadiums, it's different. I think that's all part of enjoying the sport, and it's also a part of how crowds can affect the sport and affect individual players. John, let me ask you, do you think NHL players are interested in another bubble playoff in 2021, should it be necessary?
No chance.
There you go.
I will be shocked if we return to bubble hockey at all. But what's going to happen is that if the pandemic continues at this rate, and it seems to be continuing, without any remedy of any sort, what we're going to see is we have to do something in order for the players to get paid. And so there's going to have to be something. Now, I actually think as baseball's experiment of the travel and the stadiums is going to end up being probably positive for basketball and hockey. I think we will see travel in regional areas for the start of seasons, when they start in January or February. I think we will see a Canadian division with Canadian teams traveling to each other's stadiums, each other arenas to play, the Northeast, the Southwest, the Central. It's not going to be minimum security prison, which it has been for the last 2 months for basketball and for hockey.
And baseball, not to make a bad joke, but baseball has shown that a team can have a COVID outbreak and make the playoffs, like the Miami Marlins and the St. Louis Cardinals have done. So while it was awkward in terms of scheduling for baseball, they somehow got through it. And as I say, I don't mean to make a joke about COVID-19. But the worst that could have happened to baseball was we have to sit a team down for a week and create these two 7-inning games as doubleheaders and somehow make up a 60-game season. And the Cardinals never did because it wasn't necessary for them to play their last couple of games. But if you have to do it that way, you can do it, and it will be preferable, I'm sure, to the players who have had to endure all of this time in the bubble.
Well, the one thing that occurs to me is that, you know, as long as there isn't a vaccine, sports is going to operate in a bubble. But I think Major League Baseball has effectively proven that the difference of putting all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, or all your players in one place and playing all your games there, while that is clearly safe, after the first week, baseball had very few positive tests. And these were guys who were traveling every week, virtually, going someplace else. And there was
but
not...
But the players finally bought in, Bob. The biggest problem was...
But that's the point, John, is the players did buy in, and finally that made the difference.
Yeah.
At the beginning, they clearly did not buy in. Now, we had a couple of isolated cases. We had a couple of players went out to dinner one night, and one of the guys got sick. I mean, you know, yeah, and those guys got sent home. But as long as the athletes buy into the protocol, I think we've learned that they can travel. And I'm going to guess, I may be wrong, but I'm going to guess that if the NHL and the NBA come back in December or January.
Well, it's not December.
But they're going to travel. I think they're going to travel. I don't think they're going to go back into this kind of one site, two site bubble.
The only thing is that they're not going to be able to cross the border. So,
So that affects the Canadian teams. Of which there is one in basketball and one in baseball.
So what's going to happen is that the Raptors are going to, Raptors are going to have to find a venue to play in.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo. Right?
Yeah. When in doubt.
And then the Canadian hockey teams will play each other. Until there is a point in the season where fans will be allowed to be in, and then the border will open and life will go on. But right now, we're isolated, or the Americans are isolated. You put it any way you want, but we're not gonna have cross border travel in the near future.
And now we're about to see, after the first round of the baseball playoffs, how the baseball players enjoy bubbles. And as successful as you want to say that their 60-game season with travel has been. They have chosen, and weather is probably one of the reasons. Although, you've seen October baseball every other year, sometimes it's cold, and sometimes you have postponements. But anyway, they've chosen to sample both methods, so we'll see how the playoff bubble works for baseball.
Well, John mentioned, the seven Canadian teams, the hockey teams playing each other. That may be the only way a Canadian team gets to a Stanley Cup final again or wins a Stanley Cup.
Which one would that be?
I have no idea. I have no idea which of those teams. But if they're only playing each other, at least a couple of them are going to get into the playoffs, and maybe more. I mean, if you've got seven sad sacks, out of that, three of them are going to be better than the other four, at least record-wise.
You like lots of teams in the playoffs. We started that way, so.
I do. I think regular season games put my feet to sleep. I don't understand you two guys and the historic insistence that there's significance to 162 or 81 games.
Oh, no. Whoa. I'm with you, and I'm betting John is too. Shorten the regular season. Fine.
Economically, that's not going to happen, David. Economically, players will never endorse that.
Unless there's revenue sharing of all these playoff games, and at some point, the owners aren't going to want 100% of revenue sharing for playoffs. You know that. I mean, you got to find a way to make sure that the money, if there is money at stake when it comes to selling tickets and all this, that a shorter season and a longer playoff, that there's still the same amount of revenue in it. That's all you have to do.
And that's quite possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing less interesting than the last 6 weeks of a regular season in any sport.
Could we get rid of preseason games as well?
The NFL did, and nobody cried. The NFL did, and nobody cried. So,
no, and was the product, the quality of the product, noticeably different? I don't think so. I haven't seen anything in the first 3 weeks. Have you, John?
No, the worst sham ripoff in professional sports, akin to Donald Trump's tax returns.
Oh, yeah.
Was
it only the took 28 minutes. It only took 28 minutes.
Was the fourth preseason game in the NFL when no starting quarterback was allowed ever to take a snap from center. I mean, and people paid for that. Thank goodness that the NFL didn't play preseason games, and I don't think any sport needs them or should have them. Furthermore, fans, if they have any choice, well, I always have choice, should not attend. And it's another ripoff if they have to pay for them as part of a season ticket package. They are a waste of time and horrible entertainment disguised as something you should want to go and watch.
Can't disagree with you on that one, and I think I think the NFL has proven that.
I'm only laughing, David, because when we first started working together, it was the first time in the history of hockey on television was that we actually did preseason games. And
I don't know how much I enjoyed that.
I know. That's why I'm laughing, is because you didn't say it as directly as you just did, but it was almost, hello, everybody. I'm Dave Hodge. Thanks for watching. I don't know why you're watching, but thanks for watching.
I don't even think I bothered with makeup for those games.
All right, we got a couple of minutes here, and Hodge mentioned the news on the Trump tax returns, paying $750 in taxes. Anybody got the name of his accountant? Because I could sure use him.
Well, we'll come after you too, Bob.
Well, I'm not trying to cheat. I'm just trying to, you know, if
you're stealing his debate line from 2016 that, you know, makes you smart and you're looking for a way to do what he did. I'm happy to pay my share of tax. John?
Yeah, John, will you pay Dave's share of his tax?
By the way, if I had both the money that both of you guys have ever made and have, you know, you guys should be paying taxes. I'll just put my, you know, 54% in every year, make it happen. That's all I'll do.
Shannon, have and had are two different tenses. And
I'm not sure why you're separating Bob and me from you.
Well,
where money is involved.
You guys are stars. You know, I was just happy to be around. You know, I was just happy to have a job.
Now this has all been worth it for you to say that. That's
all right. Before again, I'm trying to wrap this thing up in some logical fashion. And that
why
possible? Tomorrow night we have a debate, and the tax situation is on the table. Do you believe? I had a text, and it's exactly what I said. You know, I can't wait for somebody said I can't wait for tomorrow night, and I said decisions in America have been made. The debate will change virtually no one's mind. Agree or disagree, Hodge?
I wish it were the case because the debates, while they're a, you know, they're a sideshow and you gotta watch, or you can't watch, but you gotta watch. You don't want to watch, but you find out you will watch. Are a horrible way to try to decide a president or a prime minister. The best president could be, for me, the worst debater, and the best debater could be the worst president. And in this case, it will be a circus. Trump will accuse Joe Biden of being a pedophile, an alcoholic, a drug taker, this, that, the, and how do you, you know, it's like, when did you stop beating your wife? They'll accuse him of that too. How do you respond to that? If Joe Biden takes the bait and loses it, so to speak, he will be declared the loser of the debate, and Trump will be declared the more aggressive of the two. And that's what we want in a president in the United States. And I think there will be an effect one way or the other of the debate. Hopefully Biden is smart enough to laugh when the rest of us are laughing and look over and say, "Would you believe this guy?" That would be his best line for me. But I wish the debates, A, didn't take place, or B, could mean absolutely nothing. But historically, there have been occasions when debate moments have been considered significant, and it's possible in this case. So who knows? I mean, I do agree with you, Bob, that the election is over, and what we're seeing now for the next 30 some days is Trump's attempt to overturn the result of that election. But this will be one way of doing it.
Shannon is raising his eyebrows.
Well, I don't think Donald Trump can lose any voters in the debate. Not one. But Joe Biden. Joe Biden could.
I don't agree.
No. There are still questions, I think, and I am not taking sides. Actually, I am taking a side, but I'm not going to tell anybody. But I think that my fear is that Joe Biden does not impress enough. And a lot of people say, well, it is Sleepy Joe. And that's the fear I have when it comes to the debate. I don't think Trump will lose one vote. I don't think he'll gain one vote. I don't think he'll lose one vote. I think Joe Biden could lose voters.
And Donald Trump has proven your point, John, that there is absolutely nothing he can do or say that will lose him one vote. And he said it before any of this nonsense started, when he predicted that he could shoot a gun down Fifth Avenue in New York and not lose a vote.
Sure.
That was true then. It's true now. It's unfortunate. It's sad. It's ridiculous. It's disturbing. But that is the case. And so he's looking forward to the debate. And yeah, Joe Biden is, you know, like, don't get, it's the old story, like, don't get knocked out.
Yeah.
Don't be the victim of a knockout punch, and don't hit yourself in the head. But he's got a whole lot to lose, and Donald Trump has nothing to lose.
Jill Biden might win the debate. Jill Biden would win the debate. I'm not sure Joe can. So,
well, I mean, we're waiting for, I wish the vice presidential debate occurred first, because there, as much as Donald Trump can't lose a vote, Mike Pence could lose a few for him.
Well, I'm glad you two Canadians have weighed in on the U.S. election.
There's nothing.
Albeit, I think your opinions are all full of crap, but that's okay.
Do you have your mail-in ballot, Bob? What?
I don't have to tell you that. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't have to reveal his tax forms, and he's the president of the United States. I don't have to tell you who I voted for.
No. Do you have your mail-in ballot?
That's none of your damn business, is the answer to that question.
Okay.
But we are citizens of the world commenting on an issue that affects each and every one of us around this
Well, it
world.
Does. You're right. You're right. And we can break into song too, David, but I mean, we're not, I don't think that's likely.
And our, wow. and our right to comment on these things should not be disparaged.
Which is why I asked you.
In fact, journalists check out Tom Friedman of the New York Times in any television interview that he has done. Watch his outrage at what is going on, and then ask yourself, if you agree, why everybody doesn't come on television and do the same thing, predict a second civil war in the United States.
Well, at that juncture of this conversation, I think I shall call it to a halt, because if we get into that topic, we'll be here for a lot more time than we are generally allotting to this.
We might have to reconvene on November the 4th or something.
That'd be an excellent idea if Mr. Hodges is amenable and available. Another conversation on this and other topics would be delightful.
This is an absolutely important topic that demands further discussion, as is the decision to start or not start Jun Ryu in game one at Tropicana Field. I will lose sleep over that.
All right. We get it. I'm not throwing my pen. I'm just going to say
that is the sleaziest and easiest, only because those two words rhyme, that anybody can use.
I didn't even see it. So
congratulations, you've got it written down somewhere.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah,
David.
Decades.
Hey, yeah. Bob. David, thanks.
This is more interesting than anything we can tune into.
Well, we'll see how the audience reacts to it.
And aren't we glad we didn't have a meeting to plan the topics?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, then there's clear proof of that.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you. Stay healthy.
That's the most important thing.
Shannon, we'll see you again in a couple days.
Cheers.
That's it for us. Have a good one.